Blog Talk Radio.
All that means is we have our recording platform, okay? I am trying to teach the public something, and that is how drugs actually get to market and how research is actually done. So there's a lot of jargon that's involved that has to be unraveled, and also people don't really understand the pipeline or how it goes from one a thought like you guys had in your garage to saving lives. And there's a big journey in between those two, which you're taking. And so what I'm really looking for, I'm definitely going to be asking you about Alzheimer's and about ALS and how what you're doing impacts. And I'm actually going to start with the metabolism and proton folding and as best as you can make it for laymen to explain it. But then I'm going to go into things like translation, how these things get translated. And so is that okay with you guys? That's the first question.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, I'm going to read something to you so you'll see exactly what I mean. This is from your website. Here's what it says. The study is a 24-week randomized, double-blind, multi-site, placebo-controlled study in volunteers. They don't know what randomized, double-blind, multi-site, placebo-controlled means. So I actually want to go through those words eventually, but it doesn't have to be a million, because we have a short show. We have an hour show, but as succinctly as you can. Because the others take discussion, but these are really just definitions. But if without understanding them, you can't really get what clinical trials even mean. So we'll probably do something like that in the second session, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay, so we're good. Now, the other thing I always ask everybody, and we're going to start in a second, is there anything major that you want to make sure I get out that I could miss?
I think something that's very important to us that I think will come through in many answers anyway, but is that we want to make it clear that the reason we do this, and I certainly don't think we're unique in this industry, but is because these are really terrible diseases that affect a lot of people, and we're doing this because we want to help. And I think most of our decisions we make are all based around that. And so I think that'll come through anyway. But just to state it plainly.
Sure, it will. And I want to make sure: do you say Amylyx Pharmaceuticals? How do you say the name?
Yep.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Amylyx, and you say AXM, AMX0035, is that the way it said?
Yeah, we even shortened it just to AMX35.
AMX35, okay, that's what I want to know. We're ready to rock and roll. Okay, Stu, he's going to test some music, and then we'll see.
Okay, good.
You ready? Okay.
Ready to go.
Yep, okay. He's really not ready. He's going to do a minute of the music, but we have to be quiet anyway. Okay. While he's doing that, where are you? You're located in Cambridge, right? So are you in Boston now?
Yeah, both working from home in Cambridge. We both both have the benefit and risk of living couple blocks from the office.
Got it. Understood it. All right. Yeah, you can test the music. Okay, now we're quiet for 10 seconds. You'll hear me introduce the show and you guys. Okay, go ahead.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. Now, I'm on a campaign. Ever since coronavirus came into the news and I realized I was in a vulnerable population, used to just be an old lady, now I'm in the vulnerable population, I began to realize that people are paying attention to drug trials. They're paying attention to what they call clinical trials and where these different kinds of remedies are in the pipeline between the lab and your medicine chest. So I've been trying to get the folks who are really doing it explain to you how they are creating the cures and the preventions that will come to you in the future. Some people call this translational science or translation, but it's translating what's going on in the lab to the real world, basically. And we have two people here who are thick into this. Now, we have Joshua Cohn and we have Justin Klee. And I'm chuckling a little bit because these two guys from Brown University originally came up with their life's work in their dorm room when they were students. Now, a lot of people do a lot of things in their dorm rooms, but these two guys were asking each other, why do neurons die? And as a result, they began to work on issues of Alzheimer's disease, which we talk about a lot on this show, and also ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. And they've actually been knee-deep in clinical trials. And what I want you to understand is what they do. And, of course, what they can do for you eventually and how this really works. It is not something that even in our chemistry or biochemistry, and by the way, many doctors are not 100%. Your local doctor may not be 100% aware about how all of this comes to fruition when they write that prescription. But you, here on Generation Bold Radio, you're going to know. So thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today, Josh and Justin. And let me start first a little bit with explaining to us what Amylyx Pharmaceuticals is doing right now with their AMX 35.
Yeah. Right now, we're developing AMX-35, which is our main drug that we're working on for neurodegenerative disease. And our focus right now is in ALS and Alzheimer's, and ALS is the farthest along. So we've just run and completed a clinical trial with AMX-35 that showed some really exciting results. And so we're now determining, what the next steps are for the drug, and whether more clinical testing is going to be required, or if we're able to bring the drug rapidly to market.
Okay, so before we go any further, and then I throw it a different question out to you. Just explain what is a clinical trial, so that people understand the stage in the pipeline of from your dorm, let's say, to their closet. What is a clinical trial?
So the whole process of drug development is a series of getting closer and closer to a drug that you can get a prescription and pick up at your pharmacy. So the first step starts with the concept. Is there something about the disease where there's a target that we want to hit? Maybe there's an enzyme that we want to downregulate, whatever it is. And then you go through a process of, okay, can I hit the target? And then if I hit the target, does it matter? And so you take that forward through, first you start in petri dishes, then you move to animal models, and then there's a whole process of screening out the wrong candidates. So you want to be very sure by the time that you get to people that this is actually going to do what you want and presumably going to be safe enough to take as well. So that's another key part. By the time you get to clinical trials, you're you know that at least in all of your cellular and animal models that you can hit the target and that it looks like it'll be safe. And then once you go into clinical trials, generally first you test in just healthy volunteers. You're looking for is the drug behaving the way that I hoped it would? And then you go into patients. And I think that many people, certainly the two of us, were unaware of just what a rigorous operation a clinical trial is. So in our case, for example, we were working with 25 medical centers, mostly academic hospitals across the U.S. Everything is incredibly regulated, has to be written down, double-checked. Everything has to be locked. Everything has to be blinded so that no one knows who's on placebo, who's on treatment. But the goal and the reason for all that rigor is because we really want to see, is this a drug that should go forward to people, and is it a drug that can really help benefit in the disease or diseases that you're studying?
So there's a twofold process. One of them is, are you hitting the mark? Is the thing that you think you're going to be changing happening? And if it does change, does it make any difference in the life of the person or in the prevention or cure? There's two big issues here. And I just want to give you a little what I call translation, translating research into what the consumer could understand. Take a look at the website. Go to Amylyx Pharmaceuticals. It's AMYLYX, AMYLYX Pharmaceuticals.com. And what you're going to see in one of the headings up there, it's called Pipeline. And it's very interesting. It's very simple. Just click Pipeline. What you'll see above will be how you begin with the concept, how you go in then into clinical trials, and then the phases 1, 2, 3, and eventually 4, where you're actually administering the drug to human beings. And you'll also see a little space there that shows how far these trials have gone with this particular company. Right? So that gives you an idea that there really is a protocol, and the protocol is extremely deep. Certainly, if you're not in the field, you don't have to know it. But you do have to know it as a consumer and understand why. In these days of coronavirus, you might be hearing a Dr. Fauci saying, we're going to have a clinical trial, or we're going to accelerate the clinical trials, or we're going to accelerate phase 2 or phase 3. These aren't things that you guys have been hearing about as consumers in the past. It wasn't in your world. It's in your world now. And I will tell you that if it stays in your world in terms of understanding this, you're going to age better, because there is so much out there that's being done, like the great work that we have here from Josh Cohn and Justin Klee, that will make a difference in ALS, in Alzheimer's, in the diseases of aging. We come back. I want to talk about something that we call in our shop metabesity, but it is this connection between the metabolism and proteins that have to do with the brain and Alzheimer's. And it's not the kind of metabolism you think when you're digesting something and you're hoping you won't gain weight. Don't go anywhere. We are going to decode this science for you, no matter what. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, you see how we're doing. Very, very good. That was great, by the way. That was just what I wanted, so you're spot on. Anything?
Thank you.
Yeah, very, very good. So we're in our next segment right now, but we're not on the air. We're just talking now. He's going into our next segment. They're putting in commercial. What I'm going to do now, I'll start with either one of you. Tell me which one. I do want to talk about what you're finding, the idea that I call it metabesity. And the metabesity is a word that I don't know if you know Dr. Zan Fleming, but he was with the FDA. And he started a company called Connexum, which is transitional. He takes the drugs and brings it through the FDA process, okay? And I work with him on a conference called MedObesity, but it's looking at the common causes of age-related diseases, like cancers and Alzheimer's and even heart disease and so on. So when he says metabolism, I've learned it doesn't mean the metabolism I thought for me, because and obesity is part of it, but it's different. So would you tell me which one I should ask the question about, protein folding and metabolism, in terms of neurodegenerative diseases? Who wants to take that one, Justin or Josh?
I'm happy to. Either way.
Yeah, Josh, why don't you take that one?
All right, so we'll do that with Josh. So now we're getting into what you're doing, what you're hoping to accomplish, as opposed to how you're accomplishing it. Okay? We're going to devote this next segment to that. All right, I'm going to ask Josh the first question. Okay, Stu, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and a few bits of business here on Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. We have a lot of information pouring out to you. And it's all free. All you have to do is go to generationboldradio.com and give me your email address, or even better, even simpler. If you went to my name, Adrienne Berg, ADRIANEBERG.com, and go to contact us, you will be able to get our free newsletter. It now comes every Monday. We've added a section called Notes from My Inbox, because I get such wonderful things, freebies, all kinds of things, but I don't have time to tell you about it on the radio. And so I tell it to you every Monday in our newsletter. You can go to Adrienne Berg's blog, which is Bottom Line Personal, is our publisher. It's called Aging for Beginners. You can also get that, a link right to that, on adrienneberg.com. And there, very recently, we just put up, I think this week, what you can do to save theater, all the freebies that you can go on television or Prime or Amazon, Netflix, and see live theater through video. Who you can contribute to if you would like. So that's How to Save Theater. And a cartoon for your grandkids. Why are Grandma and Grandpa wearing masks? We even created a little cartoon for you in our blog. And I did it for my 2-year-old granddaughter, and there's a lot more. So for those of you who want all this information in your inbox every single Monday, including the archives of our great podcast, just go to adrienneberg.com and leave me your email address. It is absolutely free. And let's go back to our guests now before we take a little bit of a break to give you some more information about the things that we're bringing to you. But right now, I'm on a campaign, and helping me with that campaign is Josh Cohn and Justin Klee. Now, they are the founders of Amylyx Pharmaceuticals. They've been working at this since 2013, and honestly, for what they're trying to do, they've gotten very far in 7 years. I know that sounds funny, but in the field of pharmaceuticals, that's not a long time. To be at the stage of a clinical trials for a drug, AMX35, that could unravel, prevent, cure ALS and Alzheimer's and other degenerative diseases. So they explained to us this long process of how you get from a thought to actually a drug, and the clinical trials needed, and the process where they then begin to work with actual people and patients. But I want to go backwards with you, Josh, right now, and I want to talk about what you're really finding in terms of this neurodegenerative diseases of memory loss in Alzheimer's and other difficult functionalities with ALS. I know that you talk about problems with proteins and protein folding and metabolic issues. Now, when the layman thinks of metabolism, we generally think we've got a stomach problem, or we don't metabolize food well, so we're overweight. But you're talking about something a little bit different and much more endemic to the entire biologic system. So explain what you mean by problems with protein folding and metabolism and how AMX-35 might change that to help people in the field that might be subject to these terrible diseases of ALS and Alzheimer's.
Yeah. The neurons that we're born with, stick with us for our entire life. So in a way, they're pretty precious. Whereas some other cells in your body can replace. It's not, the body doesn't have a big capacity to replace neurons. And so because of that, it's really important that they, kind of stay healthy throughout life, and they're susceptible to, problems that occur can kind of accumulate over, especially over a long lifespan. So specifically, neurons generate all of their energy. Kind of the power plant in a neuron is a structure called the mitochondria. And the mitochondria takes in, food you might eat and, sugars and things like that, and uses that to produce energy. And what we're seeing is that in a number of neurological diseases, especially, as people age, it looks like the mitochondria slows down so that you are producing less energy, for the neurons. Additionally, as people age, they, the main structures in a cell that help you, that kind of make up everything and help, processes go are called proteins. And those proteins get produced by a structure called the endoplasmic reticulum. And as you age, the endoplasmic reticulum has more and more trouble keeping up with the amount of proteins it needs to make and making sure that the proteins have good quality control, that, when they come off the factory line, that they're right, that there's not defects, that there's not problems. And so basically our thought was, if we could make a drug that could boost up the mitochondria to help with energy production and boost up the endoplasmic reticulum to help with the protein production, quality control, and folding, then you might be able to make neurons more resilient, even in the case of a genetic problem or aging or, whatever might be causing a neuron to have problems. If the energy is working well and then the protein folding is working well, it might allow them to survive and even thrive under, difficult conditions.
Justin, I'm going to throw this to you on that score and tell me if I'm being just too simplistic or maybe too hopeful. What I'm hearing here from Josh is the importance of the energy in the neuron and creating that energy. And over and over again, when I speak to exercise fitness professionals, we just had Judy Foreman on. She's the author of Exercise is Medicine. That word mitochondria comes up. It comes up over and over again in studies that show that if people exercise, they increase the mitochondria in their muscles and in their body. And they've even had studies showing that if you bicycle with one foot, that foot gets more mitochondria and the other one didn't. So can you explain to us, just is there a connection between exercise? Because they now say that exercise is important to ward off Alzheimer's. Or is this just commercial hype, too simplified? Because there seems to be some connection here when I talk to fitness experts and deep science researchers, geroscientists like you, that word comes up. Can you give us your take on the connection between our behavioral health and what you're doing in your clinical trial?
Yeah, I'd be very happy to. So I think that there's a lot of exciting research right now on lifestyle interventions and how it can help prevent or help with Alzheimer's and other diseases of aging and other forms of dementia generally. I think what the research that I've seen so far is something that our mothers all knew a long time ago, which is that eating well and exercising is good for you. And what's good for the heart, what studies have shown is good for cardiovascular disease, in fact, seems to be very good for our brains as well. Now, one of the key parts to all of this is exactly what you said, which is the mitochondria. So our cells are constantly using energy to perform their general functions. As Josh said, our neurons are particularly precious because while there's evidence that we get some new neurons, largely most of the neurons we have are the ones that we're born with. So they are particularly sensitive to these types of things. The exercise research that I've seen suggests that by exercising, we can both increase the number of mitochondria as well as perhaps increase their ability to produce energy. It's probably pretty complicated because exercise has all sorts of different effects, but it seems that they're very beneficial, which again is something that all of our parents told us from the probably
right.
before we can remember. Now, I think with Alzheimer's and different diseases, what seems to happen is that for reasons we don't fully understand, our mitochondria and our cells generally, in this case our neurons, don't act the way they should. They start to dysfunction in a number of different ways. And so that's where we think that it's important that you have both therapeutic interventions like we're developing as well as lifestyle interventions. I think it's really important that it's not either one or the other, but I do think what's really encouraging is the research that's been shown on lifestyle interventions, namely diet and exercise, are things that we can do right now, and there's pretty good evidence that they're good for us, while companies like ours and others will continue to test potential therapies that could benefit in addition.
Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Centaur and Pegasus studies, which you guys probably named, so I know what else you were studying at Brown and the kind of things that were interesting to you. But the fact is that other than Greek mythology, we're going to get out of the world of mythology into the real world of how folks like yourself, Amylyx Pharmaceuticals, are creating these clinical trials, are preventing and curing for us. But who the stakeholders are. We'll be talking about the government. We'll be talking about the disease-related nonprofits that you have to work with and are working with, and how that all can be very important to the consumer when they choose what charities and what nonprofits to support. I'm not sure that every consumer understands exactly how people in the pharmaceutical industry are interfacing with disease-related nonprofits, but we'll learn that in just a moment, so don't you go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, so that was great. By the way, did you name those studies Centaur and Pegasus?
So what we actually did was we had all of the lead doctors at all of the medical centers in the study submit
right.
names, and then we had them vote on them, and
right.
that's where Centaur came from. So it was actually named by one of the one of the people helping out with the trial. But then once Centaur was named, we felt that we needed to stick with the theme. So we did name Pegasus.
Very good.
To stick with
I'm going to actually ask you that question because it's a great answer. and because it's a good lead into who the stakeholders here are. I think you understand what I'm going to ask, because you have great relationships with the disease related nonprofits, and they probably are funders. Are they some of your funders?
Yeah,
right. And are you getting government money too? NIH money?
We haven't yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't. So the it's complicated. I'd say there are a number of there are a number of things that make it a little difficult for small companies. And the other thing too is that for a long time, Josh and I were and our one other person were the only people at the company. And they one of the rules is you have to have an MD or PhD to get the grant funding, and so we were restricted from that.
Right.
But that being said, I think the small business grants that the different parts of the NIH do, I think are wonderful and can be really fundamental for many companies. But we didn't fall in that category.
Yeah, this is for another time, and we're gonna get on right now. But I'm creating something with this Connexum group called the Catalyst Institute, and it's a nonprofit for interdisciplinary education, basically. You can see where I'm going with this: behavioral scientists, geroscientists, the public, and gerontologists. All educating and being together in the community. But hopefully, if this takes off, one day we'll give grants. We already have it structured to be also a grant, you know, foundation. So I'm very interested in all these things very much, because it's a life mission of mine to prevent and delay all the diseases of aging, and to have a world that isn't ageist. If we're going to live longer and healthier, we may as well have something to do. So during those years, that's my thing. But
that's
we're going to get into the stake. Yeah, it is. It's very exciting for me to be able to do this at this stage of my life. I'll be 72 to take on something so new, you know, and so big. It's really amazing. But you're part of it, so this is what's so wonderful for me to be talking with you. Okay, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, and we really do go the gamut. Let me tell you what I'm working on now on the blog Aging for Beginners. My 10 favorite songs about aging. Now, some of them you have to hide the children. Not every one of these songs is, you know, You Are My Sunshine. Let me tell you. There are some wonderful songs out there about aging that, you know, just make sure you don't scare the horses. But we will definitely, definitely be publishing that in our next Aging for Beginners blog. We have up now 3 brand-new blogs because they are now so popular. And my publisher has asked me to do this every week. Shoot me. But the fact is, I'm churning them out for you. And we just did a cartoon, Why Is Grandma and Grandpa Wearing Masks? We just did How to Save Theater with incredible free theater you can see on Prime and Amazon and Netflix and so on, as well as places to donate. And finally, The Happy Prisoner, My Secret of Enjoying Myself While I'm Sequestered. So it's not all love and kisses. There's a lot of tough stuff also in our work, but the fact is we bring a lot of webinars to you, we bring this podcast to you, and, of course, the blog to you. Go to adrienneberg.com and give me your email address. Everything is free. adrienneberg.com contact page. You can also tell me topics you're interested in and people that you'd like me to interview. And before we go to our wonderful guests right now, who are the founders and really the head honchos over at Amylyx Pharmaceuticals, and I want to spell that for you, AMYLYX. tell you very seriously, if you have somebody with ALS in your family, if you have somebody with Alzheimer's in your family, take a look and see the clinical trials that they're doing right now. Everything is on their website, as well as information for families that are suffering from this. And we'll get back to Josh Cohen and Justin Klee in a moment. Right now, we'll just take you to our little store so we can pay the bills. We'll be right back.
Hooray, our Generation Bold store is up and running. Just visit our website, generationboldradio.com, for access to unique products and services like luggage forwarding for your next trip, gorgeous Brazos canes and hiking sticks, Wander Club charms to commemorate your every adventure. I handpicked everything in the store to add fun and ease to your life. It makes a great gift, it's priced right, and it's of the finest quality whatever has been selected. All these items truly enhance my life, and I want you to discover them as well. Visit GenerationBoldRadio.com and see for yourself.
Okay, so let's go back to our great guests. So we've been speaking here with Josh Cohen and Justin Klee, and a while ago, not that long ago, in the world of pharmaceuticals, only 7 years ago, they began a company called Amylyx Pharmaceuticals, and today they're working on AMX-35. This is an idea they thought about in their own dorm room. They asked, why do neurons die? And we just got an explanation here that neurons are something that is with us all of our life, very much different than cells that do regenerate. In fact, I always tell you in my beauty blogs, that it takes only 28 days to flush out cells on your skin and get yourself a nice new cells on the top of your skin. So 28 days as opposed to all your life. Now, they're working on this, and they have studies called Centaur and Pegasus, and I joked with them that they must be into the Greek myths. But no, this came out a little differently, this name. And let's go to Josh and just talk about that for a minute. How did you get these names, Centaur and Pegasus? And it'll give us a good idea of the stakeholders that you have to reach out to in creating a drug that actually goes to market.
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's been said that developing a drug takes a village, and it's really true. So many different people work together to make everything happen. So in running the trial, we worked with 25 hospitals, all of which, you know, have to basically run the same protocol, the same, you know, they have to do everything the same so that the study can be well-controlled and, you know, so that everything is, you know, accurate and everything when measuring the drug and when measuring patients. So what we did was we brought together all of the sites, representatives from all the medical centers, which include, you know, both doctors, nurses, physical therapists, coordinators who help with the logistics of things. And we asked them to submit potential names for our ALS study, and then we had everybody vote on them. And it ended up that Centaur was the top chosen name, which was why the ALS study ended up being named Centaur. And then when we were going into Alzheimer's, we felt that we wanted another potentially horse from Greek mythology, which is where Pegasus came from. But in running a trial, you know, what's really hard is just the amount of coordination. Every hospital has to be doing the same thing. Patients, you know, we want to make sure that the experience is good for patients in the trial. We have to coordinate so that the visits aren't too long and that, you know, all the same tests are being done and being done in the same way at every hospital. And additionally, there's a communication aspect where we want to be, you know, well looped in with the different groups of, you know, patient groups, so, you know, such as the ALS Association, a group called IMALS, and, you know, a number of additional groups who really work to, get the patient voice to us to make sure that the way we're designing our trial is in a way that patients would want to be involved in, and that it's compassionate towards patient needs, and also to get the word out that, you know, a trial is ongoing, and that it could be an option for patients to enroll in. So there ends up being quite a lot, you know, and then as one other level to it, you also end up working very closely with the FDA and, you know, some of the review and compliance boards at every one of the hospitals to, you know, make sure that you're, you know, maintaining patient safety and keeping records right and all of that. So it ends up being, you know, no one person can run a clinical trial. It ends up being a, you know, big undertaking with, you know, tens or hundreds of people, you know, having different roles.
You know, I'm going to say something here that's going to sound critical because I'm making up my own mind as to whether I should be criticizing this or not, and I'd like your input. So you can see how many stakeholders we're talking about here. We're talking about the hospitals, the patients themselves, the FDA, the government that represents us, the other regulators. Sometimes there's even state-involved regulation, the funders that are paying for all this to happen, which we'll talk a little bit about later, as well as the geroscientists who you're talking to right now, or you're listening to right now. And you have it's a funny metaphor. You've basically got two horses in the race, Centaur and Pegasus, ALS, and two diseases in the race, ALS and Alzheimer's, two very, very important focuses, no doubt. But here's my question. Many of the things you're going to discover and have actually already discovered, you just have to do the full proof of concept, would help us with other diseases. And that's where I'm looking at things like Metabesity that looks at common causes of many diseases all at the same time. And, you know, solve one, solve many. But that is not the way we work. That's not the way our regulations are. That's not the way our funding is. That's not even the way our nonprofit disease organizations are. There's the heart disease, the cancer disease, and sometimes the twain don't meet. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. Whether or not our whole approach to the human body is not holistic enough, or just as a practical matter, whether folks like Josh Cohn and Justin Klee and Amalek have to work in certain silos or nothing will really get done. If that is a practical way to go, or if that's going to change. Don't you guys go anywhere, because this is going to have a big effect on your future and the future of aging.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, I think you got my question at the end there that we'll talk a little bit about. Is this our last segment? Now this is the last segment, so I do want to make sure that anything that you want to get out, you've gotten out, and that you have time to do it, because it's not a short segment, so we're good. Anything either one of you want to make sure I ask?
No, I think that In fact, I like your question a lot, and I think it's something Josh and I feel very passionate about. So I'm glad that you feel the same way.
Right. Right now, just to tell you, we're struggling over at Connexum at the Metabesity 2020 conference, which is supposed to take place in the Carnegie Institute. This is the third year in a row already, but because of coronavirus, we don't know if we can have a live event. Right? These were three-day events with 500 geroscientists running around. So I'm looking into online events now. And I'll let you know about them because you probably would like to be involved in some way with this.
Sure. Yeah, please.
Whether it's an attendee or as a speaker or just to know what's going on with it. There'll be a lot of, you probably know a lot of the people who actually are involved with this thing. And I don't know if you know Nir Barzilai. He's the Dr. Nir Barzilai. He works the centenarian study over at the Einstein Institute on Aging in Montefiore. So he's.
I haven't met him, but I know his work. Yeah.
Exactly. Not personally, but I certainly know who he is.
Right, and you know the usual suspects. You know, the geroscientists that talk. all the TED talkers and the ex-TEDs and, you know, all those guys. As well as, I forgot her name, Dr. Woodcock from the FDA is always one of our moderators.
So, oh, fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Okay, Stuart, we are ready. We're just gossiping.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit, I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And the problem with this show is it is very difficult to describe to anybody. It's one of the few shows that deals exclusively with the issue of aging, but it has nothing to do with being old. And what we have here is an understanding, at least I'm trying to impart, that aging starts more or less biologically around age 28, age 30, but it really starts from the moment that you're born. And it has nothing to do with a chronologic point in time like 65. And yet we think of it that way. And so we don't have to think about aging until we think we're old. Well, wrong. We deal with it financially. We deal with it sexually. We deal with it with regard to our appearance and our health. And we introduce things that do not seem to appeal to the same kind of audience. For example, we do talk about using rose oil so you'll look better. And then we talk about geroscience and mitochondria. But why? Because we are one person and we are holistic, and what makes us happy in one area of our life will probably make us happy in all areas of our life. And so I try to bring it all together, and that's really the essence of the question I'm asking these two geroscientists right now. We're speaking today with Josh Cohn and Justin Klee. Now, for 7 years, they have been toiling in the fields of clinical trials and drug pipeline. They got to the clinical trial after quite an effort. Take a look at Amylyx Pharmaceuticals, AmylyxPharmaceuticals.com, and you'll see what they're doing in ALS, sometimes called Lou Gehrig's disease, and Alzheimer's, which we're all very familiar with, looking at the proteins, looking at the metabolism of neurons so that they don't lose their energy, so that they stay with us, so that we don't have our memory loss or our degenerative neurological conditions of aging. But my question was very much like what the show tries to do. We are holistic. Why are we always looking at, and I'm going to throw this out to either Justin or Josh or both, why are we always looking at cancer, Alzheimer's, heart disease, as if they're all separate? Yes, in the early days when they had to be detected, I could understand that we needed that protocol. But if you look at the FDA now, they have a list. It's a list. If you don't have that disease, you can't get funding, you can't discuss it, you're working in silos. What do you think of that now that you're 7 years into the process? Either Josh or Justin or one at a time. I really want to hear about this.
Yeah, I'd be happy to start. So I think it's an excellent point, and I think that the work that you and others are doing to try to get people to look at things more holistically is critical. It was one of the bases for our company, in fact. So we found that researchers have looked at many of these different diseases, Parkinson's disease, ALS, Alzheimer's, FTD, the list goes on, as individual diseases and what causes them. And I think that one of our fundamental insights was that there's a lot that's common across these diseases. And so we should look at what's common across the diseases. And then if we can intervene in those processes, if we can have a therapy that works, that may work broadly across many different diseases rather than just one. The difficulty was exactly what you said, that people tend to silo into a particular disease. Even within a disease, they'll focus on exclusively one pathway, And it's unlikely that many of these diseases are caused by just one pathway going awry. If that were the case, we probably would know the answers by now. But they're very complex because people are very complex. I think going even broader than that, as you're saying, I think that people are not just the brain or the heart or the skin, or people are all of these things. And so I think it's really important that as we look at both complex diseases as well as just fundamental qualities such as what is aging and how does aging occur, that we look holistically. And I think that when we start to broaden the way we look at things, I do have hope that we'll have many insights that we didn't before. Now, this is all contrasted with the general scientific method, which wants to test only one variable at a time and control everything else. And so I think those things will always be a bit opposed to each other, but I think that we can take aspects of both and do better research, such as the way that we did, looking at commonalities across diseases, across different body systems, and I hope that we'll have a lot of new insights into diseases that we didn't have otherwise.
Well, that's such a wonderful statement, and I'm so glad that you answered it that way, because I really didn't know how you were going to. You might have been a champion of status quo in terms of, you know, particularly in your case with Amylyx Pharmaceuticals. Honestly, you get a lot of support from the different diseases that you are working on, the ALS groups and the Alzheimer's groups, and that's so important to you, and you're very important to them. But that is the way it's structured. Those are the groups that you would have to get support from. So, again, throwing this out, the next related question, and because we're coming to the end, it's an important one. I think it was Josh, I'm not sure, either of you, said that neurons are with us all our life, and we don't replace them like we do some other cells of the body. Except that when I speak to neuroscientists, I get happy. Why do I get happy? Because they all usually tell me that we can build new neurological paths even as we age. And that if we do new things, we're all told. We're told to read, to learn a language, to learn an instrument, to do new things that we never did before with our brain, and we can increase our neurological paths. And this doesn't have to do with disease. This has to do with keeping our memory sharp and our crystallized intelligence sharp and all these things. So we're all trying to exercise our mind. And even today, with coronavirus, we're sitting in front of computers doing brain games, you know. So is that wrong? Can we not? Do the neurons stay with us and they are kind of immutable, we just have to save them? Or can we create new ones and new pathways?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, you know, my view on this at least, which, you know, I'm sure some people would agree with and some people would disagree with, is, you know, while neurons are important, what's really important is the connections between neurons, you know, the synapses that neurons make to each other. And throughout life, we constantly create, destroy, modify different synaptic connections neuron to neuron. And that's really what learning, memory, you know, thought basically is thought to be. And so that can continue developing and changing with age and with time. And, you know, even, you know, it's been shown even in some of these neurodegenerative diseases that people who have, you know, potentially learned additional languages or, you know, are very highly educated might, you know, maintain cognition for longer. And that might be because, you know, they have a lot of synapses to kind of fall back on, even if some of the neurons are, you know, no longer able to function. So I definitely agree with that view. And, you know, I think even if we lose some neurons, if we can keep building synapses, you know, it might allow people to maintain, you know, for longer.
Well, this is wonderful to hear and a very important explanation for me personally, because what we're talking about is neurons that stay steady and that we want to save versus the pathways between them that we can strengthen and increase on our own volition. And don't forget, don't keep doing the same thing you're doing and thinking that you're building new pathways. You got to get, don't get killed in the comfort zone. Get out and do something new. If you can't dance, start to dance. If you do dance, keep dancing, but find something else that you can do. So that's an important way. So thank you so much. I want to send everybody again to really a fascinating website for those of you who want to get a little bit more of an insight into how drugs come to your medicine chest and what they're doing here and what the different studies that they're doing, the clinical trials. It's AMYLYX Pharmaceuticals. For those of you who have a loved one stricken with Alzheimer's or ALS, there's a lot of information there for people who are in need of caregiver support or other kinds of help with resources as well. So thank you both so much for doing this wonderful work.
Well, thank you very much. This has been a real pleasure.
Great.
Thank
and for
so
everybody
much.
Else, yes, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just saying thank you. This is fantastic.
That's great. I love to hear thank you. I always give room in the show for thank you. And for everybody else, hopefully this show is going to air in a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll be out. But if we're not, you know, I always say get out there, kids, and make it happen. So I'll say stay home, but make it happen. See you next week.
I'm inappropriate.
Okay, so did that go pretty much as expected?
That was great.
In fact, it
went even better. I thought it that the way you sort of flowed all some really wonderful discussions in there was great. Great.
Good, and you know, like at the end, if there's a little section, we tighten it up so it looks good. And what happens is we send you the link. We hope that you will promote it in any way you can by putting it on any of your social media. That's the way we get
certainly.
New people. Okay? And the other thing we do is we chop it up into these little excerpts that you can see on YouTube because every word gets lit up. I don't know if you've seen little things like that. So you can hear it, but you also see it. And in your case, I'm doing it twice. I'm doing it one for the show. And the other one, we have something that I'm doing for the MedObesity Conference called Gerograms. And they're like messages from geroscientists. So they're called Gerograms. And I'll take a few of the things that you said, and we'll make them into Gerograms too, for their social media, which is MedObesity 2020, Twitter and LinkedIn. Okay?
Great.
And we'll send those to you so you can use them also. They're very short, like 2 minutes. And it takes
awesome.
A while, it takes a couple of weeks. And we'll have all that information to you.
Wonderful.
Great. Take care, stay safe, and keep working. Okay.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Bye. This was really a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, for me too. For me too. Take care. Right. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.